This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hey, and welcome back to the Tomahawk Take podcast. I am your host, Jake Mastriani, and with me as always is Alan.
Hello, hello.
And Fred.
Good evening from beautiful Abilene.
And it is an exciting week. It's been a busy week in Major League Baseball, and we are excited to actually have baseball news to talk about after a long lockout. And man, it has been a crazy week for the Atlanta Braves, for their fans. A lot of emotions all over the place. We're in a really fun week though, and spring training games starting up this weekend as well. So baseball is back, and I am excited for this upcoming season, excited about this Braves team, especially after how the week has unfolded. But let's start off at the top talking about the biggest move of the week, maybe the biggest move of the offseason, and that is the Atlanta Braves trading for first baseman Matt Olson on Monday. And just absolutely massive news. The Braves gave up a big package here, giving up Christian Pache, Shea Langeliers, Ryan Cusick, and Joey Estes. A really strong package, and I know we talked about it obviously off air when that package happened, but it almost seemed like with what Alex Anthopoulos gave up and how he never gives up big prospects, he was going to have to extend Matt Olson to really kind of make sense of this trade. I mean, it makes sense trading for a great first baseman to fill a hole and a need that you have, but to give up that package, which I thought was an appropriate package, but a strong package that I never thought Alex Anthopoulos would actually do, you got to try to extend Matt Olson. And he did that, and he gave him an 8-year extension. So the Braves now have their first baseman for now and the future in Matt Olson. And Alan, I mean, I don't know if this surprised you, shocked you like it did me. I just honestly never thought Alex would be willing to give up the prospects in a deal like this, but I think his hand was kind of forced to do it, and I think it ended up being a great move, especially when you add in the extension.
That's absolutely correct. It was a shocking 1-2 punch, the trade and then the extension less than 24 hours later. I mean, here they were coming up to the introductory press conference for Olson, and shortly before that, it's like, oh, by the way, we signed him. So that was kind of a crazy sequence of events. The fact that we gave up so much, I mean, I saw a tweet that Alex hadn't given up any top five prospects in his entire tenure in Atlanta, and then all of a sudden gave up three in one shot. It is probably the biggest deal about this. I had anticipated all along that there had to be some sort of contingency plan for the loss of Freddie Freeman if it came to that. The question was, what was that contingency? And I suppose we now have the answer to it. I was hoping all along that at least we would have a shot at getting Olson if it came to this. Anthony Rizzo didn't really excite me. Any other first baseman options that might have been out there didn't really excite me. So this is the one that excites me. Yeah, Matt Olson, as they say, cliche-wise, checks all the boxes. And is at least as good a defender as Freddie, at least as good an offensive threat as Freddie. And now he's signed up in his prime from ages 28 to 36 with an option on the end of that, in fact. So I think that the Braves did extremely well here. When you look at what they gave up, I think that we are going to miss some of these guys. We're going to miss Langeliers in particular, because I think he had the chance to be a Brian McCann-like catcher. Excellent defense, probably better than McCann, probably not quite as good a hit tool as Brian, but definitely showed the power in the Southern League last year. And we might end up missing Ryan Cusick if he develops into the top half of the rotation starter that he might be projected to. But other than that, I think I'm good with the package and good with what they gave up, and I don't think they're going to miss those other guys too much. So, yeah, it was a lightning bolt strike this week. Unfortunately, one they had to do.
Yeah, like I said, it's not that the package is unwarranted by any means. It's just I never thought Alex would actually do it and give up those type of prospects just because we haven't seen him do that with the Braves yet. But you talk about the fact that you had to have a contingency plan, and we've discussed it on here before. There were really two options. Either you bring back Freddie Freeman or you go get Matt Olson. Otherwise, there's nobody out there that you're going to get at first base to fill that hole, to fill what Freddie Freeman gave you. So, it really was down to those two. And in the end, while I'm sad Freddie Freeman won't be back, I think it's a great move for the Braves now and going forward. Matt Olson is a great player, Fred, and I can't wait to see him hitting bombs in the chop house.
Yeah, Olson, certainly production-wise, he's going to produce at or better than Freeman did, particularly in the later years of his contract. He's going to hit more home runs. His on base isn't Freeman-esque, and neither is his batting average. But he's still going to pump a high OPS because his slugging is up. He's going to hit more home runs, not as many doubles. I think he'll hit more home runs at Truist Park and in the NL East than he did in the AL West and the Grand Canyons that are out there. And that will probably make up the difference for it. Defensively, he's a stud defensively. You're not going to see the fantastic splits that Freeman did, but Olson's got long levers, and he gets way out there, and he makes great plays at first base. He's a great guy. He's from the area. He loves being there. Everything that you could possibly want from Olson, you're going to get at the plate and on the field. You've lost nothing there. If there's a loss, it's, as I wrote yesterday, was it yesterday I wrote that? Or the day before? This loss is, if you've got a loss that you have to find a way to fill, it's in the leadership role that there. Olson posts every day, just like Freeman. He played 100, he'll play 156, 158 games a year. He's going to come out and do his work. And he may just slide into that role because he's not a rookie by any means. He has the experience. It's a question of how quickly the team accepts him in that role. And that's going to be the real question. Until then, Dansby's got to step up and take some of that. Maybe Charlie Morton for the pitchers. But the leadership vacuum is the only thing that concerns me. I said on ESPN radio a while back there was no direct replacement for Freddie, and that's the truth, because you don't get production and leadership when you do that. You buy the production and hope the leadership comes from somewhere. I saw Ron Washington say the other day that he'd already talked to him. The first thing he did was pulled the people aside and said, look, time for you to step up, boys. Freddie's not here anymore. Time for you to do your job. And I think that he'll encourage him and nudge him. And he said, he can feel bad now, but on August 7th, we're playing baseball and all that has to go behind you. So I think, you know, having Ron Washington with us is always a blessing. And I think even more so now. But Olson's great. I think he'll be wonderful there. Fans will love him.
Yeah, and April 7th. We're not waiting until August 7th for the start of baseball season.
Did I say
season,
August?
But,
okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I want to get
your he was thinking lockouts.
Yeah, we're done with the lockout. That is over.
Okay.
But I wanted to get your thoughts, Brad, on the package that was given up for Olson. What player in that package were you most surprised was included? And what do you think about the extension as well for Olson?
I like the package. I would have preferred that we send Contreras instead of Legelliers, but there's a feeling that catchers are very short-lived and very fragile. You look at, you know, what happened to Posey. Okay, he came back from it. But Joe Mauer, look what happened to him. Catchers are very fragile animals. And I think that he feels that you can get a defensive catcher behind the plate to catch and throw, and you can pick up the offense somewhere else. So Legelliers is the one I worry about or miss the most. I feel so sorry for Pache. His heart broke when he got traded. He always wanted to be the Braves. He wanted to follow Andrew Jones' footsteps. But frankly, the rest of them don't bother me at all. I don't worry about that. The extension, it was a six-year extension. They bought out the last 2 years of arbitration, paid him some extra more. It was a great buy because he was here and he was eager and he was leaning forward and they had the momentum of, gee whiz, I'm playing for my childhood team. Oh, by the way, we want you. Sign here. And he did. Okay. I'm not saying he went into it blind, but I think that there is a point at that point in time, you have leverage with a guy who comes from Atlanta, grew up wanting to be a Brave. This is his dream team, and you just traded for him. You just give away future Hall of Fame first baseman, perhaps walk a package of great players, and you want to give him a guarantee him 6 more years, 8 years of playing in Atlanta. And I think that is a big lever for him at this point. And so I think the package is good. I think if they'd given Freddie 6 years in any kind of cost, he'd have still been there, but they weren't going to budge past five. And you pay your money and you take your chances.
Yeah, let's stick right there because I want to transition next, obviously, into Freddie Freeman, who is no longer with the Atlanta Braves. And that is sad. Just as a fan, me personally, would have loved to seen Freddie Freeman finish out his career in Atlanta, have a Chipper Jones type career in Atlanta, but wasn't in the cards, unfortunately. But like I said, I love the direction, the pivot that Alex Anthopoulos made. And I think he kind of had to. And we can kind of try to read between the lines to see the situation and how it went down, Alan. But I think it really comes down to what Fred said. He, his camp, whoever, really wanted that sixth year. And ultimately, that's what it came down to. The Braves weren't willing to go beyond 5 years. We hear that the highest offer they made was 5 years, $140 or $145 million. They weren't willing to give him that sixth year. And ultimately, Alex Anthopoulos had to move on. And as we know now, Freddie Freeman has signed a six-year deal worth $162 million to play with the Dodgers. So we'll be seeing him a pretty good bit, not just in the regular season, but I imagine we'll see them in the postseason some as well. But, Alan, your thoughts? The Freddie Freeman saga has come to an end. He is no longer an Atlanta Brave, and he is now with the rival Los Angeles Dodgers.
And apparently the word is that he's still crushed about that whole sequence and how it played out, but he can really only blame himself and his representation for trying to milk too much out of the market that really, really wasn't quite there. I'm reminded of J.D. Martinez when he signed with the Boston Red Sox a few years ago. He told everybody he wanted $200 million. I think he only got 120 from the Red Sox ultimately when his market dried up.
Quick fact check interlude. It was 5 years, $110 million.
That's a similar situation, not quite the same, obviously, but when you looked at it, everybody knew he kind of wanted to go back to Atlanta. He was very vocal about that, but ultimately decided to try and play a game of stare down with Alex Anthopoulos and got to the point where we had to get some other things done. There came a day, there came a time, and Alex said, okay, that's it. I'm not staring anymore. And he went and made his moves. And that's unfortunate for Braves fans. Ultimately, I think it's probably going to be better for the team. But we'll have to just see how that plays out, and we'll have to review this in another 10 years and see how that trade came down and how things progressed. But ultimately, if it comes down to something you want, you need to take it. And unfortunately, Freddie chose not to, and now he's off in Dodger blue. And like you say, we're going to see him again.
Yeah, for me, and again, maybe I'm just being kind of naive, maybe a little Homer bias. I just feel like he wanted to be with the Braves. I feel like in his heart, he wanted to be with the Braves. And Fred, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like his agent overplayed their hand a little bit in this offseason in these negotiations.
Well, yeah, perhaps. I think what the deal with this whole thing was, is we've known since last year that Freddie wanted 6 years. The last 6 year contract the Braves gave out was Chipper's, I think. The whole thing about this is he wanted the sixth year more than money, because the sixth year for an older player, that extra year of guaranteed time on the field is more important than $10 million to them, because it's longevity. It allows them to play longer. And the thing a major league player hates worst is hanging up his spikes and being told nobody wants you. So it allows him to walk away from a team he wanted to be with at a time when he felt like he could go away from it. And, you know, I don't know that he would have been He wasn't going to turn into Albert Pujols. His swing from the left-hand side was going to stay good. Excuse me. And he was going to continue to be a good player. But, you know, he's 32 years old, and he was going to slow down a little bit. And 5 years is probably a good deal for him. He probably should have taken it. It would have made $1 million more in money. But it was always the time and not the money. It was always the 6 years and not the extra money for it. I feel sorry for Freddie in one way. I remember when Pujols, the first year Pujols went to the Angels, the word from spring training was he was gutted because he was no longer with the Cardinals. Well, that's what happens when you live with somebody for 17 years and all of a sudden you're not there anymore. You get homesick and you feel bad. And I'm sure that's what Freddie feels right now. But unlike Chipper, he's from California. He's used to that lifestyle out there. He can play there. His family's there. He's going to settle in. He's going to be fine out there. Just as Olson's going to settle in and be well here. The other thing I want to clear up is I keep hearing that, well, Chipper gave them, he refused a bigger contract because he wanted to stay with the team. And that's not true. I wanted to make sure. So I read his book again this afternoon. And he said when he took his last contract, that he wanted to be the highest paid player in baseball. And he was until Derek Jeter came out the next year and got his extension, next new contract. What Chipper did do was 2 years after he signed, he went to Schuerholz and said, if we need money to bring this player back, Rafael Furcal at the time, if we need money to bring him back, I will restructure my contract to give you that money. And eventually he did restructure the contract, and they brought in Edgar Renteria, and they did some other things, and his contract went down, but he kept his two $15 million options at the end of his career in 2011, 2012. So he did give money back, but he didn't accept a low ball contract. He became the highest paid player in the league. Freddie didn't ask to become the highest paid player in the league. He just wanted the extra year. So, and this isn't greed, okay? This is not about greed. It's about, I want to play this game forever. Freddie Freeman is exactly the guy you thought he was in the middle of last year. He's a home guy. He loves his family. He loves the Braves. He loves baseball. He's played it his whole life. He wants to continue to play it. He's still the same genuine, nice guy he was last year. He's just wearing Dodger blue now. I hope he has great luck every day except when he plays the Braves.
Yeah, no, I think that's very well said. Look, I'm sad I went to the Dodgers. I really wish he would have gone anywhere else. But
Philly.
Obviously,
Red Sox.
Yeah, somewhere, anywhere. But I just feel like the Dodgers are going to be, you know, the Braves' biggest rival in getting to another World Series for the next several years. So could make for some interesting storylines in the postseason. That will be fun. But yes, I love Freddie Freeman. Still love Freddie Freeman. I'm happy for what he did for this franchise, for this organization. I mean, bringing an MVP back to the organization, bringing a World Series. I mean, his legacy is supplanted in Atlanta. But
the membership,
he is now
the mentorship for Riley and Swanson and Acuna and Albies. The way he taught them to play the game, that's there even when he's not. He taught them that way, and they're going to continue to be that way.
Right. Yes. Ron Washington talked about that a lot, too, just, you know, what he meant for the rest of the team. But I will say he is an enemy now. I mean, in my mind, I mean, he's playing with the Dodgers. They are the biggest threat in the National League. So, I mean, it does make me feel a little different in that way, you know, and if he had gone to the Angels or even the Padres, you know, I still would have sat there and cheered for him, wanted him and his team to do good. But with the Dodgers, I don't know, for whatever reason for me, it feels a little different. But still, it's not going to take away from what the memories, the moments, what he did for the Braves. Always going to love him and, you know, remember him as one of the greatest Braves that we've ever seen come through the organization. So, again, I know there's people out there, and Twitter can be a nasty place, and I see people just turning on Freddie, calling it greed, whatever. Look, I would have given him 6-130 or 6-160. I was okay for that. I was saying the Braves should have given him that. So I felt he was worth that money. again, it's a tough business decision. You had Alex Antopoulos tearing up talking about it, and it's a difficult business decision to have to move on. I think it, in the end, it was the right business decision, but definitely difficult just because for what all Freddie Freeman meant to this organization, to this franchise. Alex Antopoulos was not done this past week after getting past all that. We could have had just a single episode on those two things, but there was more work to be done. Again, another thing, I was texting with a friend after the Matt Olson trade, getting opinions on it, and we both, you know, were in agreement that it all depends on what comes next. Do you get the extension? What do you do with that money that you saved by not signing Freeman? And both of those things got knocked out this week because you got the extension and then you got the signings of Eddie Rosario and Colin McHugh as well. And, you know, we get the left-handed bat for the outfield that we needed, bringing back the NLCS MVP in Eddie Rosario. Alan, your thoughts on the signing, bringing back Eddie?
That's pretty impressive. I got to admit, I didn't think that that was going to happen. And apparently he may not be done either with some rumors that are active right now. But I'm just looking through these transactions for this week. Colin McHugh, excellent in the bullpen. Eddie Rosario gives us a bench bat option, gives us a thumping left-handed bat off the bench. Tyler Thornburg is a possible pitching option. Alex Dickerson, another possible bat off the bench. Clearly not just sitting around waiting on things. These are the other shoes that needed to drop after the Olson deal was done. These are the things that were being held up while we were waiting on Freddie to make a decision. And when we see these things in total, he's rounded out the roster very well. He's addressed almost all the issues that we had been talking about. The only things that are remaining right now, I think, are a true center fielder. I'm not sure where they're going to put one. And another starting pitcher who could eat innings. And we've got several internal options now on that. We'll have to see if that anything comes to that. But as for Eddie Rosario, he, you know, was hurt last year and didn't play that well before then, but certainly blossomed as a Brave. He seems to love it here in Atlanta. Seems like everybody's been loving it in Atlanta, and as we're bringing back Atlanta natives as well. But the fact that you've got a guy who can come off the bench at late in a game and give you a spark, give you a really good at-bat, give you some RBI potential, I like that. His outfield defense, if he has to play outfield very much, scares me. He had several instances of, oh, look what I found out in the outfield. But we'll see if we can get some work done on that. In terms of his hitting ability, I think that's excellent. I think it's great to have him back with the team for those reasons.
Yeah, and had to have a left-handed bat. I mean, this lineup is so right-handed heavy. It was important, you know, to have that. So I love the move, obviously, of Rosario. I like the Colin McHugh signing as well. I like all the signings that Alex made this week. You know, the Dickerson move, the Thornburg move, those are non-guaranteed contracts, so very low risk there. So I think you're right on or spot on. I think, you know, I would love to get, you know, somebody else that can truly play center field if they happen to be left-handed, even better, and another starting pitcher to eat innings. You know, those are really the only needs left, you know, on my wish list. But Fred, your thoughts on the moves after the Olson deal that Alex made this week?
I really love Colin McHugh. I McHugh last year. Colin McHugh is some kind of superb pitcher. He told Evan Gattis told Dave O'Brien the guy's freaking fantastic on the mound, and that's the guy who caught him in Houston. And you know, McHugh, to me, is going to be critical to this team. Right-handed pitcher in the back innings, that everything doesn't fall on Luke now if something goes bad. You've got McHugh out there. He's going to be fine. He's going to cause a lot of trouble for batters. And then they got the left-handed horses and coming in, Minter and Matzik and Smith coming in. The bullpen looks a lot better if Thornburg comes back and pitches well in middle relief. That'll be another feather in the cap. Eddie Rosario, if you go back, 3 or 4 years, I think it was, 2019, we did the simulated GM thing. I fought tooth and nail to trade for Eddie Rosario. And never did get my hands on him, but I finally did, because I knew that he had lots of pop and he wasn't going to hurt you in left field. He's certainly not Adam Duvall with a glove in left field, but he's going to hit well. He's going to hit some home runs. Okay. His on base going to 300, 305, something like that, but he knows the strike zone and he's got a lot of low ground ball rate, hits a lot of line drives. And in Truist Park, those are going to turn into extra base hits and home runs. I'm glad to see Eddie back. I I wish we had a center fielder who knew where center field actually was and didn't head for the corners every time he went to the outfield. But it looks like we're going to start with Duvall there until it gets late, and then they're going to shove Heredia out there and move Duvall to a corner. And I think that's what we're going to put up with. Unless he comes up with something else. And it seems to me that rumor we heard just before he came on the air has got legs, because DOB is out there punching it harder now. So I really wish we could have gotten Jesse Winker, or we would be able to go up and pick up a left-handed center fielder somewhere, but there just aren't any. And I think this is what we got, and we'll swing with it. Maybe Waters will figure it out or something as the year goes on, and maybe somebody will trade something that we can afford halfway through the year. I love the pickup of Rosario. I'm not so keen on Solar coming back, and I don't know where we go with him. But I love the Rosario pickup. I love the McHugh pickup. And I think that what I think is that not having the whole winter to do these things made Alex Anthopoulos a better general manager, because he had to make decisions and move forward, and he was willing to pay the price, and he did these things. And I know he went out and picked up those three outfielders, but truth be told, two of those outfielders could have fallen down a well. I mean, he didn't even know if Rosario was going to get to play last year. He had Almonte out there. So everything wasn't perfect. He's not the super genius of baseball, but he's really good when he decides to make a decision, doesn't have time to overshop the system. And right now, he's in the mode where he's finding a deal and making the deal, and nobody knows about the player lands in Atlanta, and they go, where the hell did that come from? So that's the kind of move that Schuerholz used to make, and now Anthopoulos is doing that as well. And with the budget, with the payroll sitting somewhere around $163 million this year, you can't say the Braves haven't been spending money. So let's give him credit for what he's done, and I look for the rabbit to pop out of his hat and with another pitcher and a center fielder real soon.
Yeah, that would certainly put a bow on what's already been a great offseason in my mind. And yeah, the rumor floating around as we record on Thursday night, David O'Brien of The Athletic reporting that the Braves have interest in Jorge Soler, which just brings honestly more questions in my mind as far as what do you do with him and Ozuna. I don't understand having both of them on the roster. Maybe there's an Ozuna deal in the works down that Alex thinks he can do that. If he can pull that off, I think he's even more of a wizard. But Alan, your thoughts on where do the Braves go from here? Are they done? Are these Soler rumors true? I was of the mindset that the Braves were finished, because they said after the extension that they had $15 million left, and then they went out and spent $15 million. So I was under the assumption they're done. It sounded like maybe that's not the case. Like Fred said, they are spending money at a record level for Atlanta. So I can't imagine that there's much else out there to be done, at least in a major move.
Well, I got to admit, I thought they were done too. In fact, I wrote up my preseason predictions and offseason reactions thing today and posted that. And I was like, okay, wash my hands, I'm done with that, and move on. Well, maybe not. The thing that still we've seen a lot of happening during spring training is the acquisition of a couple more veteran pitching arms that sign for maybe $1 million, maybe two, and have a chance to make the roster as innings eaters. And that's obviously what we need. We've got Morton, we've got Ian Anderson, we've got Max Fried at the top of the rotation in some order that, you know, we expect to have the bulk of the innings from. You got to get 450 out of those guys at least, and hopefully some more. But the rest of them, and there's also a couple other quirks going on. The fact that we've got some makeup games that have added some doubleheaders, so certainly the Braves are going to need some more arms and more innings out of a lot of pitchers when those happen. But you still can't say you're ever done, really. You're always trying to improve. You're always looking around. You're always trying to look on the waiver wire or, you know, somebody who's not being called up to the major league roster by a certain deadline. Those kinds of things are going to happen. And Alex has combed that forever. I mean, he had a DFA waiver thing going in Toronto that was almost legendary at times. So I expect that's going to continue to be the case here. Might it be somebody brought back like a Julio Teheran who had a showcase today? I don't know. It'll be somebody like that probably, unless something bigger is going on, and we never can tell.
Yeah, I mean, you never know what Alex is doing. And he even said himself, said, look, we don't have anything imminent, but as long as there are players out there, we will be involved and we will be interested. So I love to hear that mentality out of my GM, Fred. You know that he's always looking to improve the team. I mean, they're coming off a World Series win. You got to think, well, we know because Liberty Media's books are open that, you know, they added a significant profit last year, and it's good to see, you know, the front office going out and spending that. But I was still of the mindset, kind of like Alan's talking about, that when you see anything else, you know, it'll be a veteran starter on a minor league deal with a chance to earn a roster spot, or somebody like Julio on a $1 or $2 million deal, maybe that's incentive laden or something like that. But what do you see Alex getting done the rest of the way? I mean, I know you hinted at maybe getting a left-handed center fielder and a starter. I think maybe that's shooting too high, but what do you realistically think he could potentially get done?
Well, there aren't any left-handed center fielders sitting out there waiting for him to call right now. It's going to have to be, as Alan said, somebody who drops off a roster, somebody who is shoved down to AAA for some reason and they don't have a place in his 40 man. They have to DFA him, and Alex grabs him and he turns into gold, like whatever he sprinkled on Soler and Rosario when they came over, just reached in that pot, grabs some more of that dust and sprinkle over. I designate you the next great thing and send him out there to field, let him play. From the pitching point of view, it's going to be some kind of veteran guy, whether you trade for a guy. My personal favorite is to go get Merrill Kelly from Arizona, because I don't think they want a 34-year-old pitcher and would take a couple of rookies for him. Or you pick up a Julio or one of those guys that had a showcase out there. Brett Anderson tweeted the other day, why is nobody calling me? I'm still alive. Okay. So there's pitchers out there with experience at the major league level, and those guys are going to be looking for a job, and they're probably going to take minor league deals with an invite and see if they can make a difference. And that's probably what we're going to end up doing. He's going to give Kyle Muller and Kyle Wright, going to give them a shot to make this. You may see a Freddie Tarnock at some point. You could see any one of those guys that's on the roster that's a starter down there get a shot at this, because he'd really like to fill the inside and save money for the deadline. And I just think that right now everybody's rushing out there and signing people. I saw people sign that I didn't even remember were still playing the game, so good for them. But I don't think and the Reds sold out, selling everybody, and Oakland selling has got pitchers up for sale, but I don't think we got any capital left to buy anything with. So it's probably exactly what Alan said, a veteran pitcher, maybe a Michael Pineda or somebody like that that's kicking around that hadn't been signed, unless he signed today and I missed it, but that kind of thing. And maybe an outfielder, maybe Drew Waters figures it out and he gets to play center field. I don't know, but I don't expect he's going to sleep well until he's got everything settled down, and that could be like December next year.
Yeah, I don't know when the guy sleeps. It's been great watching him, you know, go through this off season and what he's been able to do to put this roster together. Been a fun week. Like I said, I wish somehow Major League Baseball could create a week like this in the off season or 2 week stretch like this in the
offseason. You want another lockout? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Let's do the lockout every year and then just open it up a little bit sooner. But yeah, I love, you know, been loving this week and all the moves going down. It's been a lot of fun. But let's move on from that a little bit. Another bit of just news from the week. We had some injury updates on Acuna and Soroka. Didn't really get an update on Morton, at least that I saw, but we did see him throwing BP, live BP, so that's certainly great. But Mike Soroka was in the house this week and got an update from him saying that he hopes to be back in late June, maybe early July. Look, I'm not going to get my hopes up of anything for Mike Soroka this year. If we get anything out of him, great, but I'm certainly not expecting it. But more so just for Mike Soroka, just personally, seems like a great guy. I want to see him get healthy, get back on the field. That would certainly be huge. Also, we have a plan, at least, that for the Braves with Ronald Acuna Jr., saying that he could possibly be back as a DH by the end of April. I think the date out there was April 21st, and then potentially see him back in the field by May 21st. So I take both of those as encouraging signs. Like I said, I wasn't really expecting anything for Soroka, especially not before the All-Star break. You know, if he happens to come back in late June, if he comes back before August, I think that is a massive win for him and the Braves. So I consider that good news, and getting Acuna in the lineup 2 weeks into the season, I think is great news as well, Alan.
Yeah, August is exactly where I was thinking for Soroka. I mean, he hasn't thrown a competitive pitch off a mound in about 2 years now, or at least a year and a half. It'll be 2 years by the time we're talking August coming around. So I treat him with kid gloves. He's going to take a while to get built back up. He's running at least now, which is very significant. The fact that he's doing so far is really good news. The trick is now he needs to get built back up. He needs to get that shoulder back in shape. He was doing some special exercises a couple of years ago to keep some problems from and soreness from happening in that shoulder. So he needs to do all that over again. And then he needs to start pitching. And then he needs to start rehab. And then he needs to make the tour of the minor leagues. All that's going to take time. I think it's going to be August then before we actually see him on a major league mound, maybe. So that's if everything goes right. And obviously, so far for him, unfortunately, everything hasn't been going right. Going over to Acuna, I have fears. And maybe they're unfounded because youngsters certainly have the ability to bounce back from injuries a lot better than us old guys. But I am concerned about him being able to cut in the outfield. I'm concerned about him being able to do things like be on base, taking a lead, and then suddenly have to dive back into first base. I'm concerned about maybe trying to beat out an infield grounder. You know, we've seen a lot of injuries happen with that last step reaching to first base. And if, you know, that's on that right foot, then that could impact an ACL. So we need to treat him with kid gloves as well. My other fear is that they were talking about maybe getting him ready by opening day for DH. Now, if it's 2 weeks later, April 21st, that's, you know, obviously better. But I wouldn't rush him by any stretch of the imagination. At the same time, once you unleash him, you're going to unleash a beast. He is ready to go. There's no question about his power. The biggest question I've got in terms of his game is whether he's going to continue to hit for average, given the time off, the fact that he hadn't played since last June. So that may be slow in coming, but at the same time, I am not worried about his hitting. I'm just worried about his legs for the future. Center field might be a problem there too, once we get there. But again, I'm doing all the worst case scenario things here.
Yeah, let's try to keep this thing positive. So I'll send it to Fred. Your thoughts on the Acuna and Soroka.
Well, as I wrote, and I don't know whether it's been posted yet, but I did write that they agreed to a $2.8 million contract arbitration deal with Soroka today, even though he is injured. So they feel that the Soroka is going to come back and going to be fine. I share everything that Alan said about him. I'm more worried about his shoulder than I am about the ACL, because there's nothing you can do for the ACL. If it gives up, it gives up. Nothing you can do about that.
The Achilles?
His shoulder. Yeah, his Achilles. I'm sorry. I've got it. Got Cunha's ACL in my mind. But anyway, you can't do anything about his Achilles. But his shoulder has been a problem his whole career. It cost him 2018. He had trouble with it the middle of 2019. His last pitch is on August 3rd of 2020. So he only had 25 innings. Didn't have time for it to get hurt then. But I worry about shoulders. Shoulders are so complicated. And they can go bad for reasons nobody understands. And once they go bad, they're bad. So I'm hoping it came back. I'm hoping he's got nice and strong. He keeps his mechanics good, because mechanics are what screw things up. But I want to see Mike Soroka back being Mike Soroka on the mound. And I think he's going to be fine. I expect him back end of July, 1st of August, like that. I'm worried for the same reasons that Alan is about Ronnie. I don't think you can hold that horse down. In other words, I don't think you can. He gets on first and say, okay, now take it easy, Ronnie. Yeah, right. That's going to last. That's going to last until he blinks, and he's going to see a chance. And he's going to be off like a rocket trying to steal second base or trying to stretch a single into a triple. That's because that's bred into him. That's who he is. That's what he does. And I worry about that pivoting hard on that foot. And going around the bases or doing a hard turn and heading for the center field wall to try and make a catch. And center field is not his best position. I'm not saying he's awful out there, so quit shooting at me, folks. It's just not his best position. Much like Dale Murphy's best position either, but they played him there. You've got to play Ronnie in center field until you have somebody else. And so that worries me. But boy, if he comes back 85% of himself this year, the league's in trouble, because he's going to take it out on pitchers, and he ain't going to show no favoritism, nobody. They all going to get beat up. And go, Ronnie, go, because I think he can do that.
Yeah, I'm so excited about Ronald Acuña Jr. this year. I want to see him healthy. I want to see him healthy for a full season, 140, 145 games, see him win that NL MVP, which I think he would have won last year had he been healthy all season long. So I'm really excited. Want to see him back out there. Do have worries, as I do with all great players. Injuries are a part of it. You see what's going on with Fernando Tatis Jr. over there. He needs to quit riding motorcycles, apparently. But, I mean, that's just the risk of playing the game. But I really hope he can be healthy this season. Glad we got that DH now so that he can get an opportunity to do that sooner. I agree with you, Fred, that once you get him out there, you're not going to be able to contain him. Almost reminds me of, Bryce Harper in his early years. He was just going so hard, kind of out of control, and it seemed like he was always getting banged up, and, he had to learn to kind of know when to press the pedal and when to back off a little bit, but certainly don't want to take that energy and excitement away from him. I do worry about moving him to center field. I wish they could just stick him in right, but we just don't have a center fielder, and that he's the best one for the position. But coming off an ACL, putting him back in center, I know he got injured when he was playing right, but still, typically center field, you're going to put more stress on the outfielder, a lot more ground to cover. So that worries me if we don't get another true center fielder, by the time he is ready for that. But certainly glad that he's going to be back healthy. Can't wait to watch him destroy baseballs. Apparently he was dinning scoreboards in batting practice the other day. So excited to have him back. Can't wait to see him back whenever it does happen, and hopefully mid to late April. All right. I know there's a lot to cover this week. So Fred, I'm going to kick it back to you. Anything else you wanted to mention? Something I forgot? Like I said, it's been a whirlwind type of week, so I may have missed something, but any final thoughts from you?
No, we picked up this Alex Dickerson, and if he has any kind of good season like he had last year, he gets on base a lot, hits some line drives, he could be useful. But boy, I just hope that we keep everybody healthy. I hope that the pitchers stay healthy. But I everything is going pretty good. I keep waiting for something to pick up here because I blinked. I saw Olson taking batting practice off of Yanoa today. I saw Ronnie taking batting practice. The ball sounds different off their bat. So that's a good thing. I'm just looking forward to it and hoping we can pull some magic out there and get out in front of the East and keep the Mets down so they're always fighting an uphill battle, because any team with DeGrom, Scherzer on the mound is a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to come out fast this year. I mean, like everybody in the division, everybody's going to be trying to win, to compete. Even the Nationals have made some moves that look like maybe they're going to try to win games this year. We'll see if that works out for them or not. But yeah, I got to come out of the gate strong. Certainly hope that will happen. I think Alex has put together a team to make that happen. Again, would love a couple more moves to just add to that depth, but certainly think he has put together a roster that is ready to compete right away and be one of the best teams in baseball. But Alan, any other thoughts from you before we get out?
This lineup as constructed is just scary. Every single position, no matter who you swap in and swap out, has 25 plus homer potential. You've got a core now of Olson, Acuna, and Albies that are tied up for years to go, at least five more. You've got Riley, who's got three more years of team control, and then we can certainly start talking about whether he can get extended. Max Fried has two more years. This is a team that's built to compete right now and for the next 2 to 3 or 4 or 5 years. It is an outstanding set of players, and I'm looking forward to seeing how these guys start thumping the baseballs. As I wrote today, anybody sitting in outfield seats better pay attention to the whole game, because they're going to see a lot of baseballs flying their way.
Yeah, exciting time to be an Atlanta Braves fan. Coming off a World Series, you got some great young talent that's going to be here for years to come, that you know is signed up for years to come to be with your team. So certainly a great time to be an Atlanta Braves fan. Can't be more excited about this 2022 season coming up. Well, that will do it for this episode of the Tomahawk Take podcast. Make sure you go to the website, tomahawktake.com, where you can read all of our news articles on all the sightings and getting ready for the 2022 season. So head on over there. You can follow us on Twitter at TomahawkTakeFS. So that will do it for this episode of the Tomahawk Take podcast, and we will talk to you next week.
This has been the Wow, What Happened to the Roster? Part 1 edition of the Tomahawk Take podcast, which is a production of TomahawkTake.com and Fansided LLC, a subsidiary of Minute Media, Inc. Opinions expressed on the show today are solely those of the participants, as we've rejected Minute Media's proposals on that subject. But at least we're all now locked in and ready to roll. All rights reserved. One of the musical selections used today comes to you under the auspices of the Creative Commons license, terms of which are available at creativecommons.org/licenses/by/4.0. This was a piece by Kevin McLeod entitled Batty McFadden, which was modified to fit the available space. His works are featured at incompetech.filmmusic.io. All other musical selections used come via rights already purchased by TomahawkTake.com. Thanks for tuning into the podcast today, and we're already looking forward to seeing if part two is just as shocking as part one. Hint, it will be. See you next time.